After a week's rest, we are back with the Hotspot Daily and talking about the third test between India and England. Of course, it is a new situation that sees both sides preparing for this pink ball test under light. First time India and England coming together to play a pink ball test match under lights, new stadium, possible changes in team personnel, and of course the consideration for the World Test Championship. Hello and welcome to this latest episode of Hotspot Daily with me, Chetan Narula, and my friend in London, Daniel Norcross. Daniel, how are you? How was your week's rest? And how are you gearing up for this pink ball test?
Well, it's been the longest week of my life, hasn't it? I got so used to back-to-back test matches that having to wait a whole week for the next one. And I mean, this one comes with an extra added spice of anticipation, doesn't it? A pink ball test, an enormous new ground. There'll be a sizable crowd. Wholesale changes, certainly for England. There'll probably be an odd change here and there for India as well. So it's just a series that keeps on giving, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Just loving the excitement. It's almost like, you know, 2 weeks after the series has started, you know, the excitement is building afresh. You know, it just feels like the start of something new. And why shouldn't it feel like that? Because obviously, first of all, we have the new stadium at Motera. So the last time I visited that ground was 2012. India beat England. That was the test series that India lost at home. So, you know, I don't want to say any deja vu or anything like that. I don't know what the result of this match is going to be, but it is surely going to have a major impact. But it's been a happy hunting, I wouldn't say ground, but a happy hunting place for India. They beat Australia in the 2011 World Cup at that ground, Motera, the old ground. I was there. Great match, great knock by Yuvraj Singh. But obviously, things have changed a decade later, the new generation of Indian cricketers. But just talking about the ground once again, 110,000 capacity, 50%, 50,000 people. 50,000 is still a lot of people, because it would fill up a lot of stadiums in India. It would fill up Delhi, Mumbai, Bangalore. It would even fill up Chennai, which, you know, where we had around 15,000 fans in the stadium all 4 days, and they created a hell of noise. So the English team will have to be prepared for what is going to hit them in terms of the crowd noise and crowd anticipation. Of course, the main difference is that it's a new ground, new pitch. So obviously, that's a bit of an uncertain factor. And of course, the big factor here also, lights. The lights are like the Dubai ground, the Dubai cricket ground. Circular lights don't have the tower lights. So that's one big difference. So I don't know if that's going to have an impact in terms of catching the ball, sighting the ball, especially during the dusk session. So what's your take on this, Daniel? How do you think the ground, playing at a new ground, unknown conditions for both England and India, how do you think that's going to affect the test match?
Well, it's going to be fascinating, I think. I've commentated a few times in day-night games. And speaking as a commentator, that period around dusk is actually quite hard to see the ball, particularly when it goes square of the wicket. When we talk to players afterwards, slip fielders often say that is a time when they do find it hard to pick it up. It's in that sort of magical hour as the sun goes down and then the lights take hold. So you tend to see a little bit of chaotic cricket. As the sweet spot for any side is to be bowling with the new ball just around that dusk time. Now, of course, on day one, you don't get to do that.
No.
Because on day one, that ball will be about 40 overs old by the time the lights kick in. And that's when we sort of expect to see more movement. But that's also the time when we expect to see the ball losing its luster and looking out for whether the pink ball can keep hold of its shine and still be useful and effective after 40 overs is going to be a key thing. It's one of those things where the sort of normal rules of engagement in a cricket day change. So, you know, we're also used to the normal rhythms. You see off the new ball in the morning of the first day, and then, you know, as the day progresses, you hope to be able to take toll over the bowlers on a flat deck first up. Now here, we don't quite know how much turn it's going to take straight away. We've seen the pitch over the course of the last 5 days show signs of getting drier and drier. It began very green, didn't it? We saw this lovely emerald surface. Well, that's replaced, totally understandably and exactly as to expectations. Is it going to turn sharply from the moment? Will it take a little bit longer to do that? When will a side, you know, in an ideal world, you win the toss, you bat, you bat till after lunch on day two, and then suddenly your opponent goes in facing a first innings total of 400, 450, under lights with the pink ball. That's the nightmare scenario for whoever loses the toss, I would say. So it's just going to be fascinating. We just have to recalibrate the way we see it. A game of cricket and hurl ourselves into it with gleeful anticipation, Chetan.
I agree to a lot of things you've said there in terms of, first of all, let's in terms of the catching, because India have only played the one pink ball test at home. That was inaugural test match against Bangladesh at Eden Gardens. And a lot of catches during that match were dropped in the dusk session. A lot of catches were dropped, and a lot of batsmen and bowlers said, and of course, slip fielders, let's not forget, slip fielders, they said that sighting the ball was a bit of a problem. I don't know if the SG, who are the manufacturers of the pink ball, have they made any changes to the pink ball for this test match? I don't know. But maybe it might have an impact on, you know, that catching process, as you mentioned. The color of the seats, bright orange, the lights. I mean, when you have the tower lights, it's above your eye line, right? The circular lights for slip fielders, and it's such a big stadium, you just get a feeling that they might be wearing their caps a bit lower and, you know, not letting the lights come to their eye lines. That's going to be an important aspect. The pitch, of course, the bounce and the pitch. Kolkata, Eden Gardens, a couple of years back was relayed. It had a lot of bounce. It's considered to be one of the more pace-friendly pitches in India nowadays. During the IPL also, we have seen the, you know, KKR changing their strategy from spin to pace. So again, new square, new pitch. So the bounce will be obviously an unknown. How much will it assist the pacers will be an unknown. One of the few things that have been said from the English camp is that the seamers are looking forward to bowling with this pink ball because they feel that, you know, it's doing a bit under the lights. So that's an interesting point. I mean, maybe not on day one, but maybe on day two, somebody will be bowling with the new ball in that second session. You know, it was almost like we were in New Zealand. We were not in India. We were not in Ahmedabad. It was like Christchurch. The second test match, this third test match was going to happen in Christchurch when we first saw those pictures of that green, lush green square. But yes, the latest pictures from yesterday, a lot of it has been removed. From what I hear, they will leave around 3 mm grass just to maintain the luster of the pink ball. As the match progresses, we'll see those brown patches. What we won't see is the puff of dust that we saw in the second test in Chennai. But it will take turn. There is no doubt about it. It is going to take turn. And I think both the pacers and the spinners will be in with a shout. How much will obviously depend on the conditions, the mat situation, and just makes me wonder. You mentioned the toss there, Daniel. Just makes me wonder if this is a good toss to lose. You know, if the ball is zipping through, both sides have really good pacers, and we're going to come to team combination. So I'm just wondering if this is a good toss to lose.
I don't think that as a captain you would want to put somebody in. I mean, in India, it's very rare to win the toss and bowl.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you might also not be too unhappy to get your hands on that lovely pink ball straight away.
Yeah.
Now, like I say, if it doesn't move too much in that first session, then you've got a problem. That'll be the problem for the bowling side. They're going to need to make inroads in that first session, because if you get to the point of the lights taking effect,
but
the ball has lost any of its pace, and apparently, this ball does have to be changed relatively frequently. I mean, this happens a lot because you've got to maintain the color. It's different from using a red ball, where you're talking about shape, really. If it loses its color a bit, it doesn't really matter. But a pink ball has to be a pink ball because it's designed for that, for the under the lights situation it finds itself in. So, look, I think it's going to be fascinating peeking through to see how it all works out tomorrow. The other thing, though, of course, is who's going to be playing the composition of sides, because the amount of turn, you know, you might argue, why change things? Why wouldn't people just go in with the three pacers and two spinners that has been the sort of preferred method for England, certainly, with one of those pacers being Stokes? But the word coming out of the camp is that they are really strongly considering a shift to four seamers and a spinner.
Okay.
And we know Moeen Ali's gone.
Yeah.
So, and that means that Dom Best doesn't automatically come back in. Now, who would replace him It looks like they might be contemplating a first game of the winter for Chris Wokes, because the major problem England have with the bowling lineup is if they play three pacers plus Stokes, how do they fit Broad and Anderson and Archer in together? Because then they have to have Archer batting at number eight, and that feels like a long tail. So this is where Wokes, who is a supremely confident user of a swinging ball in English conditions, he can come in at eight as one of four seamers, and he gives that batting lineup some solidity. There'll be changes as well at the top of the order, because Johnny Bairstow is, of course, now available. I expect him to slot straight in, and Dan Lawrence to miss out. And then there's a further question mark over the opening slot with Zach Crawley, we think, fit again after that unfortunate slip on the marble floor. It looks like he's in strong contention to replace Rory Burns, taking away a left-hander from Ravichandran Ashwin, who has been bowling particularly well at Rory Burns. He's got the wood over him at the moment. And it's undeniable, his numbers against left-handers, as you'd expect for an off-spinner, they're better than against the right-hander. So England may well contemplate that and slot Crawley in at the top of the order.
Interesting, because I thought that, you know, this would be one test match where we might see Anderson, Broad and Archer together. But yeah, I mean, the way England have gone in terms of their selection and the rotation, you make an absolutely pertinent point that you might see Archer, Anderson and Wokes, with Broad then being prepped, and Broad and Stone again being prepped for the fourth test in Ahmedabad. But that's again in Ahmedabad, but that's a bit away. I think the attack that you just named, I think that's an interesting one. So three pacers plus Ben Stokes and a spinner. I think that's what you're looking at from an England perspective. And then you're obviously looking at the top order balance. The one worry for England there may be if the pink ball doesn't do as much as anticipated, especially if India bat first and they get a good start in the first session. So that'll be probably one of the dangerous aspects for England. The other thing that I do want to ask you is, this has been a very, very weird series from an English perspective. Let me just say that, because they got that 1-0 lead and then they made five changes. Then they lost that match. And now again, we are looking at five changes. So you're looking at 10 changes across three test matches. You're not playing Zimbabwe. You're not playing in Zimbabwe. You're playing in India. You had a 1-0 series lead. There's a World Test Championship at stake. 10 changes. Who makes 10 changes in three test matches?
Well, in India, in Australia. But that was because of injury.
That was because of injury. Come on.
that is because of injury. Well, I mean, there are a couple of injuries here. There's Crawley and Archer. I think it's likely that Archer would have played in the second test.
Okay.
Had he been fit, highly likely.
Yeah.
Anderson is always being rotated in and out this winter. So that's sort of what was always on the cards, really. Now, I think that was complicated by the fact that, yes, you say they're 1-0 up. Why on earth wouldn't he play the next game? They really wanted him fit for the pink ball game. Now, they might be setting too much stall on it. You know, the pink ball, as you say, it might not swing. It might be that actually the spinners are going to do the job.
Yeah.
But England's planning has been always to ensure that their best swing bowler is going to be fit for that pink ball test, which is why that's happened. But you're right. I mean, it's an incredible chopping and changing. And look, you know, it's part of this has been forced on, as we've talked about before, by people going to and from bubbles. You know, Joss Butler playing the first test and then flying home. Johnny Bairstow missing the first two and coming back in. So the question is, are they able to manage that disruption? As for India, I mean, I'd be interested, do we see any changes on the horizon for India beyond, obviously, Jasprit Bumrah, who
absolutely
come back in, you would think?
Yeah, Jasprit Bumrah for Kuldeep Yadav, I think, is the obvious change that we are looking at. We had spoken post-match in the second test that, you know, maybe Mohammad Shami would be added to the squad. It was not the case. He's not been fit. So Umesh Yadav is somebody who comes back into the squad. And that's very interesting because, obviously he has cleared his fitness test. But then do you really want to take out Siraj? Because that would mean making two changes, disturbing your bowling lineup. One of the key aspects, obviously, is to make sure that you do have your fast bowlers fit enough throughout the summer or throughout the winter. Umesh Yadav, he hasn't played. That's the point that I'm trying to get at. He hasn't played since that injury in Australia. So It's been a decent break since that Melbourne Test match. We are in the almost to the end of February, so it's almost been 6 weeks. He's coming back from injury. Do you want to play Umesh Yadav ahead of Mohammad Siraj? That is the big question mark for me. I don't think it'll happen. I think there's only the one change for India. That is Bumrah coming in for Kuldeep Yadav. But stranger things have happened, especially when considering India's selection policy. So I think Umesh has been called up as a backup, last minute backup, just in case something goes wrong. But also need to mention Ishan Sharma's 100 test. What a servant he's been for Indian cricket. Of course, the last quarter of a century of test matches, he's been the more important bowler. Obviously, he started off very well, but then that middle period didn't really work out very well for him. But kudos to any Indian fast bowler who goes on to play 100 test matches. It's not the easiest job. He's had a good pace attack with him now off late, like I mentioned, in the last quarter of his century of tests. And hopefully it will continue for long. So, but here, this is going to be the last point of this short podcast. The World Test Championship. Neither side now can afford to lose a match. And rest assured, there will be a result in this game. I don't know about the fourth test, but there will be a result in this game for sure. India have time and again said that they're not thinking about the World Test Championship, which I don't think it's true. They don't want to focus too much on it, but they are obviously thinking about it. They're speaking about it. What is England's perspective on the World Test Championship, Daniel? Do they think of it? Because they obviously need to win a 3-1. India can still get through with a 2-1 win.
Yeah. The World Test Championship was quite a long way down the list of England's priorities because it didn't feel like there was any real chance of them finishing in the top two. You know, India, Australia, and then latterly New Zealand had been in such terrific form and way ahead in the table. Now, then, there's a sort of a series of, I suppose, unusual circumstances. with India beating Australia the way they did and with New Zealand winning the games they did, with England beating Sri Lanka, that has put a little bit of spotlight on it. I don't think it's a big focus for them. I'll give you an example of how it isn't. The last Test match of England's summer was a World Test Championship match, England against Pakistan. They got a new ball, and they had basically 9 or 10 overs to try to take the last 5 or 6 Pakistan wickets. They couldn't really be bothered, actually. They waited for Anderson to pick up his 600th wicket, and then they walked off. So if they really, really worried about the World Test Championship, I think they would have gone hell for leather there. Now, look, if they win this game, and I put their chances at sort of 40-60, really, you'd still expect an India at home, a strong side. You'd expect them in their conditions to prevail. But England will believe that if they get the best of the conditions, if they get to be bowling that pink ball and it's really swinging under lights, they'll think that brings them right into the game. If they win the game, then the World Test Championship is right back on for them. But they have to win both games, let's not forget. If there's a draw, then they're out of the World Test Championship.
Then we know Australia will be partying down under. Then they didn't make the trip to South Africa. They're playing T20 cricket in New Zealand and they'll be like, yeah, we are in the World Test Championship. Yeah. Look, this is a very, very unique test match. It's a very, very unique situation. You know, there's always the question of momentum in sport. I don't know which side has the momentum. I mean, yes, India won the second test match, but if it was a red ball test match, if the third test match was a red ball one and the fourth one was a pink ball one, I would say India have the momentum. But the situation has changed. It's an unknown square. England are making wholesale changes to their side. So this is a situation. It's very, very unique. Like I said, it just gives you those goosebumps, the new series goosebumps once again. And of course, we've had 7-day break as well. It'll be nonstop till the end of the ODIs and T20s from here on. And we'll be coming back to you at the end of every day's action. Till then, it's me, Chetan Narula, and Daniel Norcross signing off. Goodbye.